Is that what you want?
And tonight, just after seven, Adam is put on the spot. Now, fans of the Ambridge single wicket competition may be interested in this.
The Ashes 2015 on the BBC.
Anderson's bowled and it's all over. Australia have won.
After the first two tests, the series is level. Ball-by-ball commentary of the third Ashes test starts on Wednesday from 10:25 on BBC Digital Radio 5 Live Sports Extra and BBC Radio 4 198 Longwave. For more information, go to the cricket section of the BBC Sport website.
Well, now, for the last time in our current series, we join Horace Rumpole, where he and his legal colleagues get into a spot of hot water as they deal with an apparent murder attempt at the tap end of the bath.
Rumpole and the Tap End by John Mortimer. Adapted by Richard Stoneman, starring Benedict Cumberbatch as Horace Rumpole.
Passes the champagne, darling.
Aren't you all over? Oh. There you go.
In the bleak, depressing streets where southeast London becomes Kent, there used to exist a family by the name of Timpson. They were villains for whom, over the years, I acted as Attorney General. Tony Timpson was a mild-mannered receiver of stolen televisions, radiograms, motor scooters, and carpets.
What do you mean?
I'm only saying...
He lived, may still live, with his long-suffering wife, April, in a terraced house on a housing estate just west of Dartford.
It's just what I heard.
Or what you saw for yourself.
Maybe I did. What are you going to do about it?
On the day when my story starts, this undesirable home was rent with screams from the bathroom and a stream of soapy water flowing out from under the door.
Get off me, you murderer! Murderer!
In the screaming, the word murderer was often repeated at a volume which was audible to those of the neighbours who were hanging out their washing or cleaning their untaxed, uninsured vehicles. Someone, it was not clear who it was at the time, telephoned the local cop shop for assistance. Almost immediately, a police car arrived and the front door was flung open by a wet and desperate April Timpson. As Detective Inspector Brush, an officer who had fought a running battle with the Timpson family for years, came up the path to meet her, she sobbed at the top of her voice.
Oh, thank God you've come! He was only trying to kill me!
Tony Timpson emerged from the bathroom a few seconds later, water dripping from his hippie-length hair and his gaucho moustache. Looking down the stairs, he saw his wife in hysterics and his domestic hearth invaded by the old Bill. No sooner had he reached the hallway than he was arrested and charged with the attempted murder of his wife, the particulars being that while sharing a bath with April preparatory to going to a neighbour's party, he had tried to cause her death by drowning.
An attempted murderer? You, Tony?
I was provoked, Mr. Rumpole. It wasn't my fault.
Mm. I found myself in confidence with my client in a room in Brixton, Nick.
She told me what she was planning on wearing. It was all that skin-tight, halter-neck, see-through business. You know what I mean.
I'm trying not to imagine.
We was going to this party, see, around April's friend, Chrissy. And that was what she was going to change into when she got out of the bath.
I hardly think a revealing costume entitles you to drown your wife.
Well...
She says you pulled her legs and she became submerged. Anyway, how did you come to be in the same bath?
Oh, we always shared, ever since we was courting. Don't all married couples?
That's to say, yes, yes, indeed.
Speaking for myself and she who must be obeyed, the answer, of course, was no.
Well, it's like this, you see. April asked me to sit up by the taps... so I can do the shampoo and rinse off her hair.
Mm-hmm.
She finds that end that much more comfortable, know what I mean?
She makes you sit at the tap end.
I never make no objection. Although you can get your back a bit scalded, and those taps can dig into you sometimes.
So you were on friendly terms when you both entered the water?
Yeah, she was all right then. We was both affectionate, like. She washed her hair as per usual, and I rinsed it off. Then she told me who else was going to be at the party.
Oh, yes. I saw the name. Where is it? Mr. Peter Molloy.
Oh, him.
Your wife was proposing to take you to a social gathering attended by Peanuts Molloy. Oh,
the Molloys are to the Timpsons as the Montagues were to the Capulets. Their feud goes back to the days when the whole of South London was laid down to pasture and their quarrelling was over stolen sheep.
It wasn't just that Peanuts was going to be there, Mr. Rumpole. It was what April said about him and me. Sort of comparison-like.
A comparison of what?
Well, you know.
I don't know, Tony. Spell it out, please.
It was on the apropos of his privates. Well, there was me in the bath, and she said she'd heard stories about Peanuts and how he was hung like an...
Yes, thank you, Tony. I get the picture now. And what we need is a sympathetic judge who doesn't want to waste his time on a long, drawn-out case.
Let's hope.
Who have we got?
We got Sir Guthrie Featherston, QC, a well-meaning old darling who was once head of our chambers, but was now a red judge, slumming it down the Old Bailey. In his cosy room behind his court, he seemed reluctant to spend much time on a ticklish attempted murder.
Is this going to last very long, do you think? I am bidden to take tea in the neighbourhood of Victoria. Can you fellows guess where?
The pompous old prosecutor, Charles Hearthstoke, was in no mood for party games.
Sorry, my lord, we give up.
No, we don't. Is it the station buffet?
The station buffet? Isn't that you all over, Horace? You will have your joke. No. Not far off, though. Buck House.
Oh.
Her Majesty has invited me. No, correction. Commanded me. to a royal garden party. So, naturally, one would have to be free by lunchtime. Hearthstoke, is this a long case from a prosecution point of view?
It is an extremely serious case, my lord. Attempted murder. We've put it down for a week.
Yeah.
I'm astonished that my learned friend Mr. Hearthrug should think it could possibly last so long.
Hearthstoke.
Have it your own way. With a bit of common sense, we could finish this in half an hour.
Thereby saving public time and money.
Exactly. As you know, it is an article of my religion never to plead guilty.
Yes,
but
quite.
Bearing in mind all the facts in this case, I'm prepared to advise Timpson to put his hands up to common assault. He'll agree to be bound over to keep the peace.
Common assault? Binding over? He tried to drown the woman.
My lord, he was seated at the tap end of the bath.
Oh.
His wife, lying back comfortably in the depths, passed an extremely wounding remark about my client's virility.
The tap end? Did you say he was seated at the tap end, Horace?
I'm afraid so, my lord.
This troubles me. How does it come about he was seated at the tap end?
His wife insisted on it.
This woman insisted that her husband sat with his back squashed up against the taps.
Mm. She made him sit in that position so he could rinse off her hair.
You're sure?
There can be no doubt about it.
Hearthrug.
Stoke, my lord. Yes. Hearthstoke.
Yes, of course. Hearthstoke. Is this one of the facts agreed by the prosecution?
I can't see that it makes the slightest difference.
You can't see? Horace, was this conduct in any way typical of the woman's attitude towards her husband?
I regret to say entirely typical.
So you're telling me that this husband deeply resented the position in which he found himself?
What married man would not, my lord?
And his natural resentment led to a purely domestic dispute.
Such as might occur in the very best bathrooms.
And you're content to be bound over to keep the peace?
Reluctantly, my lord, I would agree to that restriction on my client's liberty.
Mr. Hearthstoke, my compliments to those instructing you, but in my opinion, it would be a gross waste of public funds to continue with this charge of attempted murder.
Mm.
We should be finished by 11:30.
And so we all trooped through into court number 3 to polish off R.V. Timpson, and to make sure that Her Majesty had the pleasure of Guthrie's presence over tea and strawberries. I made a token speech in mitigation, something of a formality as I knew that I was pushing at an open door. When I sat down, Guthrie thanked me sincerely, then passed sentence on Tony Timpson in a number of peculiarly ill-chosen words.
Timson.
I have heard about you and your wife's habit of taking a bath together. It is not for this court to say that communal bathing in time of peace, when it is not in the national interest to save water, is appropriate conduct in married life. Chacun a son goût, as a wise Frenchman once said. No, what throws a flood of light on this case is that you, Timson, habitually sat at the tap end of the bath. It seems you had a great deal to put up with. And your wife, she, it appears from the evidence, washed her hair in the more placid waters of the other end. I accept that this was a purely domestic dispute. For the common assault to which you have pleaded guilty, you will be bound over to keep the peace in the sum of 10 guineas.
So, Tony Timson was at liberty and the case was over. I had no idea at that point of the full extent of the tide which was about to overwhelm poor old Guthrie Featherstone, but I had a shrewd suspicion that his lordship might find himself in deep, deep water.
Are you laughing, Hilda, or is there something stuck in your throat? Perhaps a remnant of tonight's pork chop.
Did you read the Evening Standard on the way home, Rumpel?
I was going to, but I must have dozed off.
So you didn't see this piece about Guthrie Featherstone?
Show me.
Carry on drowning. Tap End judge's amazing decision.
Oh, God.
Wives who share baths with their husbands will have to be careful where they sit in the future. Because 29-year-old April Timpson of Bexley Heath made her husband Tony sit at the tap end, the judge dismissed a charge of attempted murder against him. It seems you had a good deal to put up with, 55-year-old Mr. Justice Featherstone told Timpson, a 36-year-old window cleaner. Oh, did Guthrie really say that, Rumpole?
Something like that, I think.
And what was your part in this travesty?
Travesty?
This Timson fellow was your client. I imagine you think it's quite acceptable to drown a wife. Like drowning puppies. You think it's all perfectly understandable. Well, Rumpel, you'd better not try anything like that with me.
Hilda! It never crossed my mind. Anyway, Tony Timson didn't drown his wife. He didn't come anywhere near drowning her. It was just a matrimonial tiff in the bathroom.
Well, why should she have to sit at the tap end?
Why, indeed. If she had, and she tried to drown him because of it, I'd have defended her with equal skill and success. There you are, you see. Absolutely no prejudice when it comes to accepting a brief.
You think men and women are entirely equal?
Everyone is equal in the dock.
And in the home?
Well, yes, of course. Although I suppose some are born to command.
Was what I thought, but did not say.
Trust me, Hilda. I love women. I would never be unfair to any one of them.
But you are unfair, you and every other man in the legal profession.
What?
You may think you're as good as gold, as blind as Lady Justice, but you're as bad as Guthrie Featherstone.
No.
And it can't go on like this. You've always said I had an eye for detail when looking at your briefs.
Hmm?
Well, I think it's time to put my expertise to better use. I shall read for the bar.
The bar, Hilda, you... You want to be a barrister, but...
I'm just a woman?
No. I was going to say that I think that's a wonderful idea.
In actual fact, the thought of Hilda studying law for years filled me with dread. Not that I was against the idea because she was a woman. I was merely against the idea because she was Hilda.
There were women outside the bailey this morning, Horace, and last night. They were shouting at me.
Poor Guthrie had called me into his chambers with prosecuting counsel. His lordship seemed very upset.
They want me sacked, and it's all because of the tap-end business, which you wittered on about for absolutely ages.
I was merely explaining my client's position.
You led me up the garden path, and now they're waving banners calling for my dismissal.
I think you will find that a High Court judge can only be dismissed by a bill passed through both Houses of Parliament.
And you think that unlikely, Hearthrug?
Hearthstoke.
Nevertheless, something has to be done. For all I know now, the Lord Chancellor is at this moment planning my retirement. I should make amends for your mistake, Horace.
My mistake, my lord?
I've invited the gentlemen of the press to attend my court, where I plan to clarify my decision in the case of Timpson.
When you say gentlemen of the press, you have actually met those hacks, my lord.
We was hoping for a shot of the wife in the bath.
Naked, eh?
Completely stock, as with bubbles, obviously.
Obviously.
But she wouldn't do it for less than a pony.
Outrageous!
I know, greedy cow.
The hacks filled their benches, then listened in silence as Guthrie attempted to explain his position.
I have had my attention drawn to the report of the case in the Times, in which I am quoted as saying to Timpson, it seems you had a great deal to put up with, and your wife, she, it appears from the evidence, washed her hair in the more placid waters, etc. It is the full stop which has been misplaced.
Oh,
and I have checked this carefully with the learned shorthand writer, and she agrees with me. The sentence in my judgment in fact read, it seems you had a great deal to put up with, comma, and your wife, full stop. What I intended to convey, and I should like the press to take note of this, was that both Mr. and Mrs. Timpson had a good deal to put up with. At different ends of the bath, of course. Six of one and half a dozen of the other. I hope that's clear.
As clear as mud, old darling.
You writing this down? You must be joking.
I certainly never said that I regarded being seated at the tap end as legal provocation to attempted murder. I would have said that it was one of the facts that the jury might have taken into consideration. It could possibly have thrown some light on this wife's attitude to her husband.
What's he trying to do?
Get himself out of hot water.
But the attempted murder charge was dropped, and the entire tap-end question was really academic, as Timpson pleaded guilty to common assault. Do you agree, Mr. Rumpo?
Certainly, my lord. You gave him a very stiff binding over.
Have you anything to add, Mr. Hearthrug?
Stoke, my lord, and no.
Oh.
Did he achieve very much by that statement to the press?
Yes, he did. He managed to dig himself into a hole that became just a tiny bit deeper. Have you seen the Standard?
No.
Claude Erskine Brown had escaped from the clutches of his newborn twins, Tristan and Isolde, and was catching up on the gossip in Pomeroy's wine bar.
Bathtub judge says it again. Putting her husband at the tap end may be a factor to excuse the attempted murder of a wife.
Oh. Did Guthrie really say that, Rumpel?
He did, Erskine Brown. He really did.
Well, then, he deserves... He deserves... Oh, God, goodness me, I can't keep my eyes open. Mm.
The twins waking you up at night?
Oh, you have no idea what it's like, Rumpel.
Ah, you're forgetting I do have a son.
One! You have one child, Rumpel. And did you feed him when he was a baby? Did you wind him, change him? Walk along Upper Street at 2 a.m, pushing a gigantic pram until he went back to sleep? And then did you do it all over again with the other child?
Actually, no.
No? You just let the little wife do all the work, didn't you?
I'd hardly call Hilda little.
Philida and I are splitting the parental duties right down the middle.
Well, bully for you.
When Philly goes back to Chambers, I'll spend more time at home looking after the twins.
Oh, Erskine Brown, don't be a fool.
Oh, you think it's women's work, bringing up babies?
I didn't say... No, I wouldn't say... That's unfair. But I do think that you will go insane if you're forced to stay at home far away from the company of your peers.
Oh, God. You're right. What am I going to do? What am I going to do?
Well, for starters, order another bottle of Chateau Thames Embankment. Then we'll concentrate on the Timpson case. Take your mind off nappies and nipples.
Yes, 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 yes. Good idea. You know, they've been asking Sam Ballard about Guthrie.
Who's been asking Ballard?
Keith, what's his name, from the Lord Chancellor's office. Keith wanted to know what Sam thought about Guthrie.
What does Soapy Sam think about Guthrie?
Well, I heard... And it's just a rumour that Sam said he was lacking in judgment.
A judge lacking in judgment? A bit of a drawback, surely.
I think we may be seeing a space on the High Court bench, in which case they might be looking for a replacement from the same chambers. Sam would go to the bench and there'd be a vacancy as head of Equity Court.
So you think Guthrie Featherstone should go? Not Because you fancy being head of chambers, just because...
Because he comes out with such injudicious remarks. And Sam said it was exactly the same at Marlborough. Always getting himself into trouble with his big mouth.
Really? Well, I happen to have a soft spot for Guthrie. And if there's anything...
Oh, my God, is that the time? Philly's going to kill me.
Erskine Brown shot out of there as if his life depended on making it home before bath time. But it was cold showers that were playing a part in Tony Timpson's nighttime ablutions. He looked as if he was missing his hot tub when I met him in Brixton Nick the next day.
I'm confused. Who's this Chrissy you're talking about?
Friend of April's. She used to be married to Sean Malloy. She's still a Malloy deep down. So I don't know why April hangs around with a silly cow.
Was it Chrissy who was hosting the party at the very start of this sordid affair?
I will remember, Mr. Rumpole. It was Chrissy what told me that Peanuts was definitely seeing April on the sly. And it was Chrissy told me Peanuts was going to meet up with April in the general store on the corner of Morrison Avenue last week. So that's where I went, to the shop on Morrison Avenue.
Which is where you were found unconscious, bleeding from a wound to the head. Is this account correct?
Yeah. I was spark out, Mr. Rumpole, and so was the girl behind the counter.
Which is why the police arrested you?
I never touched her.
Well, someone did. Someone smacked her round the head with a blunt instrument, almost certainly the heavy cosh found nestling beneath your body right next to the £5 notes taken from the shop's till.
It wasn't my cosh. I don't have a bloody cosh.
Bloody being the mot juste, Tony.
Hey?
The girl behind the counter, Miss Ruby Churchill, she remembered you entering the shop and then the lights went out. Quite literally.
Yeah, the lights went out for me and all. I heard someone come running through from the back and bang!
Bang?
I got thumped. That was the last thing I remember before I woke up in a police cell.
Ruby Churchill woke up in a hospital bed.
Yeah, she was lucky. All I got was a plaster and an aspirin.
And a charge of robbery with violence.
And so Mr. Justice Featherstone got a chance to redeem himself in the eyes of the Lord Chancellor. And women throughout the nation. Charlie Hearthrug and I discussed the case as we waited for battle to recommence in court number 3.
Timpson's for the high jump. Guthrie's not going to make the same mistake again.
Mr. Justice Featherstone is a wise and upright judge, even if his foot does get stuck in his mouth occasionally.
Just look at the jury. 8 strong women, 4 rather sad-looking men.
You can almost hear the sound of knitting needles and the sharpening of the guillotine's blade.
So you agree, it's hopeless?
For my client, never.
And for poor old Guthrie?
Well, let's just wait and see, shall we?
I guessed that the judge would use the trial to prove himself as a dedicated protector of the weaker, fairer sex, but I could not have foreseen the lack of subtlety with which he set about the task.
Members of the jury, even in these days, when we are constantly sickened by crimes of violence, this is a particularly horrible and distressing event. An attack with a dangerous weapon. Exhibit 1. This cosh upon a defenseless woman.
Did you say a woman, Mr. Hearthstone?
I'm afraid so, my lord.
This man, Timpson, attacked a woman?
That, my lord, is something the jury will have to decide.
Mr. Rumpole, I am fully aware of that. All I can say about this case is that, should the jury convict, I take an extremely serious view of any sort of attack on a woman.
If they were in a bath, it wouldn't matter.
I didn't hear that, Mr. Rumpole.
Not a laughing matter, my lord.
Well, of course it isn't. Please proceed, Mr. Hearthstone.
It's actually half... thank you, my lord. Members of the jury, Miss Ruby Churchill, the innocent victim, works in a small general stores near Anthony Timpson's home. Timpson coshed the unfortunate Miss Churchill, whose evidence you will hear. The accomplice escaped with most of the money from the till. Timpson, happily for justice, slipped and struck his head on the corner of the shelves. He was found in a half-stunned condition with the cosh and some of the money. When arrested by Detective Inspector Brush of the Metropolitan Police,
Timson said, "You got me this time, then." Members of the jury, you may think that a clear admission of guilt.
Looking at their faces, some of them obviously did. So it was up to me to change their minds.
Rumpole. Must you read at the table? Rumpole. Please, put the brief to one side. At least until you've finished your chop.
I'm sorry, but things didn't go well today.
Has it come to this?
What?
The only topic for conversation we can have is whatever case you're failing to defend.
I thought you wanted to be a barrister.
I do.
Signed up for a correspondence course?
I'm still looking for something suitable.
But you don't want a free lesson in jurisprudence from a practitioner who studied law at Oxford University.
Where you scraped a fourth?
Do you want a tutorial or not?
Oh, very well, then. Tell me what happened in court.
Miss Ruby Churchill happened. She's the shop assistant struck down by an assailant.
By Tony Timpson?
No, Hilda. Timpson is my client.
So one assumes he's guilty?
One should assume nothing of the sort, especially if one is a member of the jury or his lordship, who seems to have forgotten the basic principles of criminal justice.
Did Guthrie criticise Ruby Churchill for sitting at the wrong end of the bar?
On the contrary, Guthrie went out of his way to protect Ruby from the perils of having to stand in the witness box. I'm sure we all admire the plucky way in which you're giving your evidence. I'm amazed I was allowed to ask any questions.
And what questions did you ask?
No, Hilda, I'm trying to teach you a lesson, so you tell me what questions I should have asked.
Did you see who hit you with the cosh? Was it my client?
No, Hilda, I asked if she knew about Timpson and the tap end.
What?
I asked if she'd heard that Tony was accused of trying to drown his wife April and had been bound over.
But how on earth can that be of any relevance?
That's what Hearthrug said. Luckily, Ruby remembered every detail of the case, seeing how Tony and April were both loyal customers.
But why tell a jury your client tried to kill his wife?
I wanted to know what Ruby thought about it.
And what did she think?
That Tony Timpson had got away with murder.
Not really what you wanted to hear.
Exactly what I wanted to hear, Hilda. I could then put it to Ruby that some avenging angel might wish to frame Tony by setting up a faked robbery.
Well, isn't that just speculation?
No harm in that, if it sows a few seeds of doubt in the minds of the jury.
And did it sow any seeds?
If it didn't, my cross-examination of the scientific officer certainly did.
Oh, you're not going to tell me about that witness as well. Before pudding?
Pudding can wait. The evidence of Dr. Sweeting cannot. Just my luck, she was a woman.
Why shouldn't she be a woman?
I'm not objecting to her gender as such. It was just irritating that Guthrie interrupted several times when he thought I was being too gruff with the poor dear.
Were you being too gruff?
I merely pointed out a lack of clarity in her evidence. There were stains of blood from Timpson's blood group on a shelf near where he fell, so it was quite possible that he'd hit his head on the shelf as he toppled to the ground. The witness, a scientific officer who claims to know something about bloodstains, was assuming he slipped when running from the shop, fell and hit his head on the way down. But it wasn't clear if he was knocked unconscious before or after his head hit the shelf. It was my suggestion that someone cost Tony, who then fell and hit his head on the shelf, as he collapsed to the floor. I think the jury saw it my way in the end. It was a pretty important point, and I think I made it pretty well.
Oh. Treacle tart.
The fact that Hilda found pudding more interesting than my defence was an indication she'd heard enough. And so I shared the next day's progress with a more appreciative audience in the shape of Claude Erskine Brown.
You got me this time, then.
Who said that?
No one said that.
So what are you saying?
I'm saying the police said that Timpson said that, but he says he said something else.
Such as?
I suppose you think you got me this time, then.
Well, does it make a difference?
Of course it does. Think about it, Erskine Brown. Detective Inspector Brush wanted Timpson done for the attempted drowning of his wife. The judge let him off. Detective Inspector Brush turns up at the shop, finds Timpson lying in a pool of blood, and he sees a chance of fitting him up.
Fitting him up? A senior police officer?
Oh, don't be so naive. They're all bent as each other. Doesn't matter what rank they are.
Have you taken again the boys in blue?
Only the ones who perjure themselves, and Detective Inspector Brush did that all afternoon.
Oh, come now, Rumpel.
He's a friend of the Malloys, by which I mean he's probably paid a retainer by Peanuts and his brother Gregory.
That's a very serious allegation.
So is robbery with violence, but Timpson's never used a cosh in his life. Peanuts and Gregory Malloy, on the other hand, like nothing better than to whack innocent bystanders with lengths of lead piping or socks filled with billiard balls.
Balls?
Balls, Erskine Brown, much like the evidence given by Detective Inspector Brush. I can only hope the jury saw through the slimy...
Oh, there you are, Claude. I should have guessed you'd be drinking.
Philly, my love, what are you doing here?
Are you the only one who's allowed to escape from the flat? Am I sentenced to 24-hour incarceration with two babies who refuse to sleep, who seem determined to scream whenever they're not being fed, who have brought me to the end of my tether?
It seems to me, young Portia, you could do with a drink.
Oh, good evening, Mr. Rumpole. I didn't see you there.
Well, why not push that pram alongside the table, then park yourself next to your husband? I'll fetch a bottle of something soothing. Chateau Thames Embankment, perhaps?
No. Stay where you are, Rumpole. Oh. I'll do the honours. And Philly's not really drinking these
days. I'll have a gin and tonic.
Is that wise, darling?
A large one.
Oh, well, if you're quite sure.
So, is this one Tristan, or...?
That's Isolde. This is Tristan. Would you like to hold him?
Oh, no. I don't want to scare the poor boy. Complete stranger picking him up. He's got quite a nose. I don't mean big. Distinguished. Strong jawline. Inquisitive eyes.
He looks like you, Mr. Rumpole. I think that's what you're saying.
No. Do you think he looks like me?
Claude can't see it. At least he's never said anything.
I'm sure it's pure coincidence.
Of course.
In a few years' time, he'll probably look completely different.
Well, I hope so.
Isolde, on the other hand, is the spitting image of you. Quite beautiful.
Mr. Rumpole.
Here we are. Another bottle of Plonk. And a large G&T. Now, drink it slowly, my darling. Don't let it go into your head.
That's exactly where I'd like it to go. Cheers, Mr. Rumpole.
Oh, yes. Cheers.
It really is quite exhausting.
What is drinking?
No, bringing up babies. Ha! I'm sorry?
How can you possibly find it exhausting when you pretend not to hear them during the night and pretend to be working during the day?
I am working. Someone has to earn some money.
Fair point, young Portia. You can't expect Erskine Brown here to stay at home all day.
But it's fine for me to give up my career.
You're not giving it up forever, I hope. Just a year or two.
I bet you didn't miss a day's work when your own son was born.
I was in the middle of a complicated fraud.
So Hilda coped all by herself?
She seemed to be doing just fine without me.
And she stayed at home with the baby, and you carried on as if nothing had happened.
It's just the way of the world.
Well, it shouldn't be. And frankly, Mr. Rumpole, I'm disappointed with your attitude.
Well, I'd best be off.
Don't want to keep the little lady waiting. Don't want to find the meal she's cooked for you burning in the oven.
I always do the washing up.
Oh, bravo, Mr. Rumpole! Bravo!
With her sarcastic applause ringing in my ears, I hurried home to the little lady to see if indeed the lamb chops and mashed potato were burning in the oven. Just for once, however, they'd survived Hilda's attempts to cremate them.
How was Nicholas today?
What do you mean? How was he?
Did he have a nice time doing whatever it is he does all day? What does he do all day?
He goes to kindergarten.
Oh, really? Where?
The place we inspected last year. The place you agreed was adequate and not too expensive. Stanhope Gardens? Ring any bells?
Do you think I don't take enough interest in our son?
You take no interest in our son.
I would do if I weren't quite so busy. And you enjoy it, don't you? The looking after business? I mean, you don't want to swap our roles. Not that it's practical or desirable, but...
I am prepared to carry out my domestic chores for now, Rumpole, but when I'm called to the bar, we shall have to rethink our arrangements. Someone else will have to look after Nicholas when I'm working down the Bailey.
Surely Nicholas will be a grown-up man by then, possibly retired.
It won't take me that long to qualify as a barrister. Just because I'm a woman, you seem to think I'm stupid.
How dare you? I regard women, some women, as equally intelligent as men. I love women.
A little too much, in certain cases.
Oh, not the Liz Probert nonsense. How many times must I tell you? I have no romantic feelings for that girl.
Good, because she's the sort who'll get you into trouble.
What sort is that, Hilda?
She's cut from the same cloth as Timpson's wife. I've been reading your brief in more detail than you, I suspect, and it's obvious to me who holds the key to this whole sordid affair.
Well, who?
Mrs. April Timpson herself. You've been looking for some kind of conspiracy within the ranks of the police force. Are they being paid by the Malloys? Are they rotten apples to the core? But it's obviously much simpler than that. Oh, beware my lord of jealousy. It is the green-eyed monster which doth mock the meat it feeds on. That cuckold lives in bliss who, certain of his fate, loves not his wronger.
Was Hilda right? Was this a crime of passion? Only the cuckold in Brixton Nick could help me.
I didn't mention it because I didn't think it was important.
Oh, Tony, you must tell me everything. You may not think it relevant, but you must inform me of even the smallest event concerning the dramatis personae.
Do what?
Tell me what happened with your wife and Peanuts.
It wasn't her and Peanuts, it was Chrissy and Peanuts. They was coming out of the shop.
The shop on the corner of Morrison Avenue?
Yeah. It's the only shop we ever used, to be honest.
I'm not sure you'll be welcome there in the future, but continue.
Well, a few weeks ago, Chrissy and Peanuts was coming out of the shop and April saw them.
That's it?
No. They was kissing.
As they walked out of the shop?
On the pavement.
Was it a passionate embrace? A zealous kiss, a seal to the indenture of their love?
Dunno. But April didn't like it. She told me she was very upset.
And jealous?
Yeah. She thought Peanuts only had eyes for her.
Which is what led to the incident in the bathroom.
Oh, don't bring that up, Mr. Rumpole. I'm trying to put that tap-end business behind me.
I'm sure you are, Tony. But I fear I'm going to turn to the tap-end first thing in the morning.
And first thing in the morning, I raised the bath-time dunking with the victim herself.
Mrs. April Timpson, some time ago you had a quarrel with your husband in a bathtub. What was that quarrel about?
Peanuts Malloy.
About a man called Peter Peanuts Malloy. What did you tell your husband about Peanuts?
Well, about him as a man, like.
Did you compare the virility of these two gentlemen?
Yeah, I did.
And who got the better of the comparison?
Peanuts.
Was there then a scuffle in your bath?
Yeah.
Did your husband ever try to drown you?
No, he never.
Why did you suggest that he did?
My lord, I object. What possible relevance can this have?
Why did you suggest he tried to murder you?
I were angry with him.
Do I understand you made an entirely false accusation against your husband?
Yes, your lordship.
Do you not realise, madam, the suffering that accusation has brought to innocent people?
Such as you, old cock.
What was that, Mr. Rumpole?
Such as the man in the dock, my lord.
And other innocent people.
Quite so, my lord. Now, Mrs. Timpson, after your husband's trial, did you continue to see Mr. Peanuts Malloy?
We went out together, yeah.
Where did you meet?
We met round the shop at the corner of Morrison Avenue. Then we went out in his car.
Did you meet him in that shop on the night this robbery took place?
No, I never.
Your husband says that your friend Chrissy came round and told him that you and Peanuts Malloy were going to meet at the shop at 5:30 that evening. So he went up there to put a stop to your affair.
Well, Chrissy, who's no longer my friend, by the way, she were willing with Peanuts by then, won't she? I reckon Peanuts sent Chrissy to tell Tony.
You think Peanuts sent Chrissy?
Pretty obvious, isn't it?
Please explain it to the court.
Well, Peanuts wanted to put Tony in the frame. Make it look like Tony coshed Ruby in the shop. Peanuts was desperate to fit Tony up.
Had Peanuts said anything to you to make you think he might do such a thing?
Oh, yeah. After the first trial, the bath time tapping thing. Peanuts said he reckoned Tony needed a bit of justice. He said he were going to see he got put inside. Of course, Peanuts didn't mind making a bit himself out of robbing the shop.
Thank you, Mrs. Timpson. One more thing, Mrs. Timpson. Have you ever seen a weapon like this before?
I held up the cosh.
Yeah, seen it a couple of times.
Where did you see it?
In Peanut's car. Kept it under the driver's seat.
Thank you, Mrs. Timpson. Thank you very much.
The evidence was complete. Hearthrug and I made our speeches, and it was left to Guthrie Featherstone to sum up the case of R.V. Timpson.
Members of the jury, you have heard of the false accusation of attempted murder that Mrs. Timpson made against an innocent man. Can you imagine what misery that poor man has been made to suffer? Devoted to ladies as he may be, he has been thought to connive at crimes of violence. Perhaps it was even suggested that he was the sort of fellow who would make his wife carry heavy luggage. He may well have been shunned in the streets, hooted at from the pavements, and the wife he truly loves has perhaps been unwilling to enter a warm domestic bath with him. And then consider, if the unhappy Timpson may not have also been falsely accused in relation to the robbery from his local general stores. Justice must be done, members of the jury. Justice must be done.
Off the hook, old cock. Off the hook.
Justice was indeed done. And when I got home, Hilda was reading the result of the trial in the Evening Standard.
I suppose you're cock-a-hoop, Rumpole.
Hearthrug routed. I should coco.
And was I right about the green-eyed monster?
Well, yes.
It was a crime of passion.
Well, no, or rather, yes and no.
Oh, you're not making sense, Rumpole.
Bear with me, Hilda. The summing up by his lordship was confused and confusing. Well, perhaps I can offer a simple précis.
I very much doubt it.
Well, there was indeed jealousy involved. Tony Timpson was jealous of his wife's attraction towards Peanuts Molloy. But then April Timpson became jealous of Peanuts' attraction towards her good friend Chrissy, who's no longer her friend. It was that jealousy which moved April to give evidence in court.
She testified against her own husband.
No, Hilda, she helped her own husband by recounting Peanut's desire to put Tony in prison for a crime he didn't commit.
Trying to drown his wife?
No, Hilda, she admits now that Tony never tried to drown her. I'm talking about the violent robbery of the shop on Morrison Avenue.
That wasn't Tony Timpson.
No, Hilda, it was Peanuts Molloy, and he tried to frame Tony, but by provoking April with his feelings for Chrissy, Peanuts failed to fit up Tony and now faces the wrath of Detective Inspector Brush. Clear?
No, Rumpole. Not clear at all.
Very well. Why don't we go through the main points of my cross-examination as we enjoy the gin and tonic and, for me, Chateau Fleet Street?
Nothing for me. And no more of your tutorials.
How do you expect to be called to the bar if you won't be taught any law?
I don't want to be called to the bar.
Hilda, no!
I can't represent people such as April Timpson, making it up about being drowned in the bath.
When lovely woman stoops to folly and finds too late that men betray, what charm can soothe her melancholy? What art can wash her guilt away?
She gives women everywhere a bad name. I refuse to study the law for years just so tramps and harlots can make up stories to hide their sordid affairs. I have better things to do with my time.
Of course you have. What sort of better things?
It's disgusting.
I'm sorry?
People having baths together.
Married people?
I don't see that makes it any more acceptable. Don't you ever ask to do that kind of thing with me, Rumpole.
Never, Hilda. I promise faithfully. To hear, of course, was to obey.
In Rumpole and the Tap End by John Mortimer, Horace Rumpole was Benedict Cumberbatch, Hilda Rumpole, Jasmine Hyde, Claude Erskine Brown, Nigel Anthony, Tony Timpson was Stephen Critchlow, Guthrie Featherstone, Julian Ryan Tutt, Charles Hearthstoke, David Shaw Parker, and Phillida Erskine Brown, Kathy Sarah. Other parts were played by members of the company. Rumpole and the Tap End was adapted by Richard Stoneman, directed by Marilyn Imrie, and is a Catherine Bailey production for BBC Radio 4.
BBC News at 3 o'clock. Turkey has said its first airstrike against the Islamic State militant group in Syria will not be a one-off. Jets attacked three targets in a border town. Turkish police have also arrested nearly 300 people with links to IS and to Kurdish separatists. The Prime Minister said Turkey could not stand by and allow itself to be targeted by militants. Police in Austria say two British men have died in a road accident in the Alps. A spokeswoman said it appeared they had been racing on a mountain pass near Salzburg and their car fell 1,000 feet after crashing through a guardrail. The court in Romania has sentenced an 89-year-old man to 20 years in prison for crimes against humanity under the country's communist government. Alexandru Vișinescu ran a labour camp from 1956 to 1963. He had denied running an extermination regime, saying he was just following orders. Football's world governing body FIFA has said the corruption scandal surrounding the sport is holding up agreements with sponsors. Several major companies are to hold talks with FIFA officials after asking for more information. Our sports correspondent Richard Conway reports.
FIFA's chief executive believes no meaningful changes can take place given the world governing body's current leadership. Together with Coca-Cola, they want a wholly independent commission to lead a reform process. FIFA, though, have other ideas. Speaking in St. Petersburg ahead of the qualifying draw for the Russia 2018 World Cup, FIFA's general secretary announced a sponsors' summit would be held next month to allay any fears. With criminal inquiries involving senior football officials ongoing in both America and Switzerland, it's going to take more than just warm words to satisfy them.
The British Bankers Association says remortgage approvals increased by a fifth in June compared with the same month last year. Analysts suggest the jump may be linked to the Governor of the Bank of England, Mark Carney, indicating that interest rates may rise around the turn of the year. BBC News.
Our relationship with computers is an often intimate one. What do they know of our lives, and what would they